Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 79 of Marketing Corner, where today we are with Taya Saya, rhetorician and voice trainer.
You got that right. That was perfect.
How'd I do?
Yeah, really good. Very
really
well.
Good. Amazing.
Super solid. Yeah.
You guys don't even know how much I had to practice that. But, yeah. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I've really been looking forward to this.
No, it's awesome. It's really good to have you, Taya.
Yeah.
I think we haven't had someone like you on the pod before, and I think... I want to take a little bit of credit for bringing you on because it was like Jen did a talk, two weeks ago now on Sassiest, and Jen and I do a bunch of talks, and I've been thinking about upping my talk game, and that's also why I originally reached out to you, actually. And now I feel like every marketeer should hear some of the knowledge bombs you have.
Yes, I think so too.
You might be a bit biased.
Yeah. So without further ado, do you mind like introducing yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, my name is Taya Saya. I'm a rhetorician. I've been self-employed for the past 30 years. 13, not 30. And I teach rhetoric, but mainly the delivery part. So I focus on the voice and the body and how that adds to the communication. So it's like an extra layer of meaning, because there is a difference to saying, oh, that's interesting. And then saying, oh, but that's interesting. You know,
That's so cool. It's actually a huge difference.
And that's what I teach.
Yeah.
What is the difference? How can we talk about it? How do we identify what is a good voice? What is a bad voice? Why do I like it? Why is it appropriate for the situation? And also, how can I learn it? How can I improve as a speaker? How can I do it differently? How can I make my points clearer? So I teach the practitioners and I teach the students.
Okay.
So I've been an external lecturer at the University of Copenhagen in rhetoric for many years. And now I'm at CBS, rhetoric of management,
okay.
Managerial rhetoric. Yeah.
I'm just curious, how did you get started on something like this? It's not your straightforward career thing.
No, I think I wanted to be an actor for many years.
Okay.
And then I started studying rhetoric as a temporary thing until I figured out what else to do, because it's really interesting and so many inspiring people and just really nice subjects and texts and insights in society and communication and interaction. So it's a lot of social aspects in rhetoric. And then I found out that they had the voice profile at the master, and that just all made sense, because then I could combine all the things that I loved from doing theater with something that was more a society level and more into how does organizations work and how can I benefit to making society in the world a better place, basically, because then you get all the people with good ideas and train them to get that ideas out and understood and acted on.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the best I can describe it, but you get the idea.
That's very altruistic.
Yeah, it was a very idealistic way.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool.
And then I figure out, okay, what else can I use it for?
Yeah.
And then now I primarily teach people who are on stage as a leader, as a speaker. I teach people who are either doing interviews for TV or are the hosts of TV and radio programs.
Okay.
So everybody who interacts with a microphone or an audience, those are the people I mainly teach in my own company.
I love that. Yeah. Super cool. How do you let's go through a process. So let's say you met Jen just before she was going to talk at Sassiest.
Yeah.
Maybe first Jen, contextually, before you talked at Sassiest, how much do you think about your voice presentation, like how you used your voice and such?
Never. Right? I was just like, don't be shaky and don't be nervous. And, you know, I it's interesting you talk about like a theater background, because I took theater as a kid, and that's where I got rid of my stage fright. And I remember having to go on stage and stare at every individual. That's what my coach used to make me do, look at every single person, make eye contact, and then look at the back of the room, where there's just bricks on a wall, and you know they can't tell that you're not looking at them, but that's kind of what I use today. But I never think of my pitch or my tone, or I just kind of go off the cuff and hope everything lands the way I hope. But this is really exciting. But I thought before we dive into that, that's okay. Could you explain what rhetoric is for the for the listeners? Because I think it's very nebulous. It could be maybe a little bit of a nebulous topic or that people don't fully understand.
Yeah, of course, it's the art of persuasion, to put it shortly. So we look at argumentation, for instance, and we look at structure and choice of words. So it's very much about how do you compose an article or a speech or something else that's meant to change the situation that we are currently in. And usually you think that it's for something better. So how do I motivate people to act in a different way or change their attitude or at least have some kind of understanding of my perspective? Mm-hmm. So it's very much about interacting with other people, changing the world through communication.
Brilliant. Let's do that.
Great.
We need more people doing that.
Yeah, that was really good.
For the better.
It's kind of funny when you say art of persuasion. I was like, that's me, the marketeer.
Yeah. And that's also why I've been dying to get on this podcast. Yes. I think marketing and rhetoric are so close.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So let's take a step back. So let's say you're about to, you want to help Jen. How do you go about that? Like, let's say you met Jen for the first time today. How would you?
Well, she did.
No, she did. Yeah, that's true. But how would you go about that process? How do you usually, when somebody comes to you and say, "Hey, help me prepare for this," or something?
I think if it was 10 years ago, I would have like an entire training program that we would go through. Mm. But given that I'm more experienced now and I have studied how people react to these training sessions, I would definitely take another approach and see, what is it that you like, Jen? Why are you on stage? What purpose do you have? What role are you supposed to play on stage? What side of yourself are you bringing into play? Mm. And then I would ask you, what do you think you should improve or what will make your performance better? So it's always from your point of view, okay, because otherwise you're going to do things to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an awareness of, does Tia think that this is right? Do I look okay? Mm-hmm. Instead of, how do I feel? How do I perform? And I think a lot of the things that we do on stage that really work are the things that we feel deep inside, mm-hmm, that is motivated from within ourselves.
It has to feel some sort of natural, right? Like you,
but not even natural, but just motivated.
Yeah.
Like there needs to be some kind of impulse that is sincere.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Because if it's only natural, you will only do the things that you are used to because they are recognizable.
No.
And I think we should do something new in order to get new results.
Mm. Yes.
So not necessarily look for what feels natural, but what feels true or what can I see myself in or what ultimately will benefit the situation that I'm in, what would benefit my speaking position.
Okay.
So I would always ask you, what do you want to improve or what do you want to work on? What do you want to enhance? How can I help you? Mm. So it's much more me who is an instrument to you than it's you visiting my world, you know?
Makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, yeah. So let's take Jen as an example again. but how do you like... one of my issues, at least when it comes to that, is like sometimes I get stuck in like these like let's call it the same waves of stuff I've done before.
Yes.
So like I have these like phrases. I use the same phrases. As an example, whenever I have to use like a dummy character, I always use like Carsten. it's like my dummy character name. There's nothing wrong with using that, but like
apologies to all the Carstens out there.
Apologies out there. And how do some of these like patterns, do you ever have to work with someone where like have to unstuck them, if that makes sense?
Yes, because once you are at this awareness point where we talk about what are there of possibilities with your voice, with your hands, with the way you stand, people become much more aware and then they can hear those phrases like, oh, dude, I did it again. Yeah. This was the same phrase I just used 70 times. Can you help me loosen it up? Can we find another word? And if they don't hear it, there could be one out of two. Either they are mentally somewhere else, they are not present here, or it's because they don't really know, like, are there any other words? Just rephrase that. So maybe they don't know that they could change this wording, that they could rephrase it so that the audience will understand it better, that it would be more to the point, it will be more specific, it will talk into an existing view of the situation.
Yeah.
So we talk about the wording. If it is something that the client wants to talk about and we have time in order to change it, but we also talk about how do we phrase this manuscript or these key phrases.
Okay. Yeah. And I was thinking like, because like there must be like some sort of it's called like golden rules when it comes to like speaking. Like, so there's like for, because some people are just natural born good at it, like, and some people are not, but but I think usually bring up like everyone brought up when Obama was president, right? Like he was really good at speaking, and that was like his virtue, and he probably had training.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
most likely, right? Like yes. I would assume so. But I think that's
he
also,
wasn't born like that.
He was probably not, right? But that's probably the golden standard, right? Like that's what everybody wants to be. Yes. So, like for instance, when I like that's also what I want to be. Mm. But I think you brought a really good point. Like you have to be self-aware that you can improve in order to even go there.
Yes,
right.
Always first step. To look at yourself from the outside and be aware, what do I already do? What do I want to change? Because it's a lot easier to change things once you have identified them.
Yeah. Mm. Did you get feedback from Sassiest?
I didn't yet.
Oh, yeah. About you.
About my talk. But I guess if I were talking to you as my coach, sorry, I just want to make sure the microphone is. one of the things I was trying to do, for example, in this talk, I was trying to change how CEOs and C-level treat their teams.
Yes.
And so for me, it was super important to impress upon them what you're doing is wrong. And that can sometimes be hard to say when you're up on stage. But I try to use a sports metaphor of how we have different positions for a reason. But in companies, everyone's kind of trying to make money. Mm. How do we change that? And I think that was my motivation was, if I can get you to change this, that's going to make marketers' lives a lot easier. So I don't know if that's a jumping off point of how you would reframe or how you would guide the not just the wording but also the tone and the intonation and as an American speaking to a mostly Scandinavian crowd, are there other, you know, I just think it's a very interesting when you talk about talking. We come with our own preconceived ideas of how language is used. I use my hands a lot. I'm a New Yorker and I like to talk really loud and really fast, and I don't know what kind of ways would you polish me, or how, you know, what are the things that I would have to look out for if I, next time I go on stage is, I don't know, like actionable things that, I'm not trying to get like a free consultation here, but, you know, but I'm sure people at home would also probably come up against this as well.
And it's so much easier to talk about this when we have a case.
Yes.
So it's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't want you to be an actress. I don't want you to be someone else. Mm. And you shouldn't fit into a box of this is how you are supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. So the gesture, using your hands a lot, keep doing that. Mm-hmm. But we might want to be a little bit more strategic about it, so that you have like wild gestures when you want to engage people and say, this is huge, like this has so much potential, so that you support the wording and you create an atmosphere. It makes it so much easier to remember what did she say when you also get that visual input. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't take any of that out.
Okay.
And you can easily speak fast, but I would put in some pauses so that people can catch up to you. People are not native English speakers. Mm-hmm. And also in order for you to reposition yourself, breathe, have a cup of water or something. Mm. Maybe signal that now something else is coming. So having that pause is kind of like a new line when you read an article. So definitely, like, pauses are almost always good. And when you talk about Obama, that was one of the things he did really well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He did a lot of these pauses all the time, right? Yeah.
But keeping eye contact, it is not an empty pause. It's a pause of reconnecting, creating meaning, checking in. Are you with me? Mm. I mean this.
It's like letting it sink in.
Oh, yes. I just felt that right now. that was the pause. Yeah. Yeah, it's just like I felt so.
Yeah. And it's so intense.
It is very intense, actually. Like it is. Mm. How do you know when to do the pauses? Like, how do you like? Is it something that comes natural? Is it something you talk to people like, hey, this is the part where you should. This is an important point. Here should use pauses or something.
Definitely. Like we just talked about, like there could be some changes in the content.
Yeah.
Now I just talked about the background. Now we're looking at how do we do it.
Mm.
A pause between the two would make sense.
Yeah, gotcha.
Kind of like having a headline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the places I would have a pause.
Yeah.
That would be pretty easy to look in the manuscript.
Makes sense.
Another place I would put in pauses is before or after important words.
Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah. So if you, what was a key word from your speech?
Revenue.
Revenue. Okay.
Revenue. Yeah. So, yeah.
It was about the sports team, right? Like yeah. you got to have offense, defense. Like yeah. you have, you like, I think one of the things I really like from your talk was this whole idea by like, if you're the goalkeeper on a team, mm-hmm. and I'm rephrasing your, but if you're a goalkeeper on a team and you're measured on scoring goals, you're never going to look good. Mm-hmm. Like, cause you're not the one scoring goals, but you make sure you still win because you make sure the other team doesn't score goals. Mm-hmm. So whenever marketing is measured on the things that they can't impact or something and not necessarily impact or different parts of the marketing team, mm-hmm. then it feels bad. It makes everyone feel bad. Mm. I think that analogy was super strong.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, good. Pal.
And just that could actually be shortened into, so if you're a goalkeeper of a team and you're measured on how many goals you score, you're going to look bad.
Boom.
You know,
boom.
That was so, solid. Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
I felt that
just in
because then, yeah, and when people make that clarity or they come to that point of...
You allow people to think. Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And once you are active, you learn a lot better.
One of the critiques I always get, mm. like, or often get, like, not always, but yeah, always, is that I talk too fast. Mm. Like, I talk too fast, and I also talk too fast, and a combination of talk pretty, I won't call it advanced, but it's not like I can dumb things down, but I talk about advanced things when I talk, mm. like, you know, LinkedIn assumed ads. Knowledge assumed knowledge. Yeah, exactly, mm. right? Mm. So I think, yeah. That's such a good point. Like these pauses, just like to let people think in and do it on the important ideas.
Yeah.
And what's so funny is like if I'm on stage and I pause, I worry that people think I forgot what I'm about to say.
Yes.
So you're like, keep talking. But that's the way you just did that now, being on the receiving end. It was like a punch in the chest, wasn't it? It was like, oh, yeah.
It was like being forced to listen.
Yes.
Like
yes.
in a good way. Yeah. Like
because I'm demanding something of you. Yes. I want this to be a dialogue, even yeah. though I'm the only one talking from the stage. Mm. Yeah. I want you to interact with me.
Yeah. No, it's so good.
May I ask a question about hand gestures? We talked a little bit about now. There's a lot of talk like with presidents, right? You have the thumb of power and the Angela Merkel.
Yes.
Is that the Merk? is that a thing or is that something that you work with or advise or?
Yeah, I think most politicians are schooled in another way than, for instance, stand-up comedians or actors and people who entertain. So they probably don't know what to do with their hands. Mm-hmm. It's something I see within academia as well, when they teach or when they present their results. It's always like, what do I do with my hands? Like, do I just put them in the pocket or do I like try to hide them? Or do I just, you know, sometimes do something because I heard that it was really good to, you know, point to what I'm... But then again, you know, it becomes forced from the outside and put upon you or like it's something attached to you instead of coming from the inside. So I think whenever you feel an impulse, okay, try to show that with your hands. Mm-hmm. And to begin with, it's going to be a little bit more of like, I don't know, it's the...
Robotic,
like something that you all... yeah, something you have to add on to your presentation, something that you also need to think about besides from the manuscript and interacting with the audience and maybe put on some props on stage or changing the slides. But then once you've set yourself free and you listen to those impulses, like I want to support my wordings by showing it visually as well, it becomes easier and easier.
Yeah.
So I once worked with Jonathan Spang,
yeah.
who is on Ted Bersenhilden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just quit the other day, by the way.
He's taking a longer
pause. He's taking a long break.
Yes.
Yeah. He's good. He's a Danish comedian, just for everyone. So Eugen, maybe. But super cool guy.
Yeah.
Like a really smart
actor. Actor, former director and owner of a theater and now host of a daily news show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, it has to come through the body before it comes out with the wordings. Otherwise, it's going to feel insincere. So if you say, oh, I'm so much looking forward, it's going to be weird. But if you say, I'm so much looking forward. Mm. So the gesture needs to come before the words, before the voice, because it's an impulse. It's something that happens straight away. You react to it and your hands and legs and everything around your body is faster than your brain and your words, right? So it's always, or usually at least, coming from your body, from your gesture, from your facial expression, from the feet, how you stand on stage. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to that impulse, I think it's also a lot easier not to say, how do you put that? Do you know what I mean? Mm. All those things, because you have like an ongoing impulse from the body and everything is much more in flow.
Mm. I think that's a good point. That's something, at least as an American, the and I think Danes also kind of do a little, Danes kind of the, when you're thinking, it's again, I think it's that scared of a pause.
Yes.
You have to fill that pause somehow.
No, totally. So I want to ask a question to you. I had a session with a speaking coach for multiple people at some point, and we talked a lot about, and I've seen these like TikToks about speaking coaches stuff. I think one of the things he always bring up is like the beginning of your talk. So from your perspective, how is the beginning? What should most people do different maybe in the beginning? Do you have any pointers there or something?
If we talk about Danish speakers,
yeah,
then it should be do it bigger.
Yeah.
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 Don't hide yourself on stage. You are there for a reason. And people don't come here planning on wasting their time. They come here because they think that you know something that will benefit them. Mm. So you might as well, show that you want to give and you want to share and you are enthusiastic about this and rubs off on them. And I think it's mostly about doing more. So do it bigger and do it louder and do it with more variation, because you would rather be on top, or you would rather be too much and be remembered than being too little, and then you have to do it over and over again to get the same effect.
Exactly.
Yeah. So even though people are not liking it or think that it's a little bit awkward or might be uncomfortable in the situation, when some time has passed, they will remember it and it won't feel as exaggerated as it did when they were in the room with you.
You got to break the mold, right? This is so many, there's 10 speakers in a day, right? Like, you got to stand out.
Mm. Yes.
I remember, and it's funny you bring this up, I spoke at a conference, a LinkedIn Summit, I think, a few years ago. And there's this guy called Nick, who's, I think he's talking this year as well or something. But anyways, he did, I think it was his first thing, he came out to a Britney song and did a dance. Mm. And he was talking about like copywriting, not super related to Britney songs, let's be real. And I remember it, and everybody talked about it. And I don't actually think it was because his feedback was his rating was same level as mine or something, really good, but not, he was not the best rated, but people fucking remembered him. Mm. I still talk about it. Mm. And that's for me the unique part, right? You got to stand out somehow.
One of the things that I always do, and it's is more not to stand out, but to get the audience on my side, is I do a crowd selfie before every talk. So I get up on stage and I say, and it is true, it started because my wife has no idea what I do. She's a doctor, so she's like, whatever. And I'm like, no, look, it's a real job. And so it started as that, and now I do that every time, and I just feel like it kind of, when you walk out on stage and there's that music and everyone's looking at you like, teach me something, you know, and it kind of diffuses that, and I feel like it gets people a little bit more on my side when it's like, hey, this is going to be sent to my kids, everyone wave. And then and then I feel more comfortable, right? Mm. And it kind of helps set the mood for me as well. No Britney songs, though. I did Robin. Yeah. I danced to Robin.
That was good, though. Thank you. That was good.
But I'm not saying that everybody should be an entertainer. No, you shouldn't go outside your comfort zone or too far off outside your comfort zone.
It should still feel natural, right?
It should be connected to who you are and the points you want to make. Yeah. It should be related to the content.
Yeah. I had a guy once who told me a good trick. I don't know, maybe you can confirm if it's a good trick or not. I haven't actually tried it yet. I want to try it. Is that before your talk starts, before we get started. So do the before we get started. And he said it's a really good way to indicate ooh, this is secret. It's a little bit, we haven't really started yet. So this is really special. and then he would always say something important. And then he would get a small story or, hey, before you got started, have you all noticed how the coffee is different? Or just as a attention grabber. I thought that was a pretty good
That's interesting. That's
a pretty good hook or some interesting way to get started at least.
Yes, yeah. Because you create a relationship with your audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Makes sense. Right.
One of the advice I wrote down before entering the studio. Connect with your audience. Yeah.
All right.
So before going on stage, know or decide, why am I speaking?
Yeah.
What is my role? What can I do to make this a great night or a good speech? Or how can I contribute with something useful? Then rehearse it. Because when you know it, you've heard it, you decided on, is this my body language? Then it's a lot easier to do it on stage. Whereas if it's the first time on stage, you go like, okay, here, I don't know, here, okay. So like how far out can my arms go and it still feels all right? So if you rehearse it in the living room, in the office, in the park, wherever you feel like, then it's a lot easier to do that and to do it intentionally. On stage. So you say like, these are the three things you need to remember. Yeah. It's not that hard when you've done it like 70 or 80 times in the past 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Then you know how your voice is going to sound when you say that in a funny way.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's an attention grabber, but it doesn't make you feel awkward.
Mm.
You just do this because that was the... that was the deal you had with yourself. You decided on this before going on stage. And then when you're on stage, connect with the audience and make it bigger.
Yeah.
So when you're on stage, it's always about, are you getting it? Do you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's with me? Yes. Mm. Good. You know, have that conversation inside your head so that the pauses are are meaningful as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier advice for Danish speakers. Is there, you know, a majority of our listeners are either Danish or foreigners in Denmark or something like that. Is there something to keep in mind when it comes to kind of international or kind of backgrounds and things like that for those of us who are in foreign countries? Is there some things that we should know?
Again, it very much depends on what you are bringing to the stage and what the subject is. But mainly, it should be about making it understandable. So it has to do with the speed you're talking. It could be something about the pauses. I think pitch is really important so that it's not all in the same tone voice.
Does that go for Danes?
Yeah. It goes for Danes as well. But just, you know, especially when you don't share the first language, then I think it's really important that you underline what was the intention, what was the feeling behind this. So even though you didn't catch the word, let's say you have a thick French accent or a Spanish accent, then you get a lot out of just following the pitch, the tone of voice. So, that for instance, sense. Like, there's a really interesting. Okay, you get an idea.
You can almost hear what she's saying, right?
Yeah, exactly. So even though I'm not really pronouncing it in the right way, then you still get the feeling. And the feeling is what sticks.
Yeah.
You're not interested in whether I say interesting or exciting or happy or whatever, but you are interested in what kind of meaning, what kind of feeling, what kind of interaction am I establishing, right? So having that pitch, that tone of voice, variation is really important when you speak to people who has another language. A way to get that, because it's kind of hard and feels like acting, is to smile a little bit. Because then you lift in the back of your mouth, and it opens up your resonance, and thereby allows you to have a lot more tone in your voice. And when you have more tone, you can vary it a lot more. You're not, you know, squeezed into this little bit box, but you have like a theater in the back of your mind or the back of your head, right? Yeah.
Huh. I never thought of that.
Nope. Never thought of that either. I just smile because, like, otherwise it gets awkward.
I'm having a good time.
I'm having a good time. It's funny. We're unfortunately running a little bit out of time, Tia. So, last tips? Anything you want to convey here at the end? Like anything for? I'm speaking in June, so for Jen's next talk, like anything we should probably haven't seen our talks, but any good tips or anything for people out there?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we get better at giving feedback on each other's voices that we include that in our presentations. That is not just about the slides or how long was the talk or what wordings do I use, but we actively look at here the body, the voice, and make a decision on what could we do? How would that benefit? How would that contribute to the meaning? How does that change the point of view or the importance of this point and of this word? So have a little play with it. Like include that rehearsal with voice and body in your general rehearsal. And then when you give feedback, it's not just about that was good or that was bad or that made it clearer and I couldn't hear what you were saying. So it's not just the practical things. Mm-hmm. It's also very much about the persuasion. Mm. Where do I put my pauses? Try to slow down. If you pronounce this in another way, how did that contribute? So that we describe a lot more than we judge. I think that's really important. And I've made a podcast with another rhetorician called Hanne Schmidt-Petersen. It is called Vi Hører Stemmer. In English, it will be We Hear Voices. Yeah. And it's not about psychiatric.
It's about,
it's not a true crime podcast.
Is there a true crime going on here?
It is literally, how do we hear voices?
Amazing.
Yeah. And from a rhetoric point of view.
Yeah.
So we look at, for instance, what do we do? How does it contribute with establishing some kind of relations to your audience? We look at gender and voice. We look about how young people are taught to be on stage, even though they might not have a lot of experience from leadership or they might not have any experience from being in a company or being a teacher or anything like that. So how do we make them really good speakers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to be pretty confident as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's mm-hmm. actually like you're talking to 20 people,
yes.
not just kids, but people, right?
Yes. So,
yeah. Love that. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah.
One last thing.
Yeah, because connected to that would be that I've said that you need to prepare before going on stage.
Yeah.
You need to connect on stage. Afterwards, the best advice I can give anybody is when you evaluate your own speech, look at three things that you did really well and you want to continue doing and only one thing that you want to do.
How?
That's one thing you can change until next time.
No, that's brilliant advice. Because it's so easy to find all the things you did wrong.
Exactly.
Right? So easy.
I have a long list.
Yeah. One thing. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. That's anything else for our listeners or for us?
I think that was the most important part. But I could talk about this for
interesting.
Cool. I learned a lot here.
Yeah.
Jesus.
There's a lot in this.
I need to do more pauses.
Yeah, we definitely need to do more pauses.
Yeah, we'll practice.
More pauses.
And on that note.
How was that?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
We're learning already.
Yeah. Thanks for listening in, guys.
Thank
and thanks
you
for
so
tuning
much.
In. And thanks for joining today. It was really cool.
Really, really
thank
great
you.
Having you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.